Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined with my co-host, Mr. Stone Payton. How you doing, Stone?
Good morning, sir. I am doing well, and I keep forgetting to tell you. I told you about the weekend. I did the ball game. I did NASCAR. I didn't tell you about Lynyrd Skynyrd. I saw Lynyrd Skynyrd, and I mean, I don't know how old those guys are, but they still rock it out pretty well, man.
How many are there still Lynyrd Skynyrds out there?
Well, there's Van Zandt's brother, but the lead guitarist, someone in the know, not me, told me that he was like one of the original. They put on a heck of a show after the ball game.
Even though that wasn't country or western?
Those are my two genres, country and western. Yeah, it still fits into the
Southern
Pensacola,
rock.
South Alabama,
there
Southern rock,
nice.
Southern rock culture. But yeah, coming off of a Labor Day weekend, I was tired, but I've gotten my nap. I'm well rested and looking forward to the balance of the week.
Since it's Thursday, it's good that you got your legs under you now.
That's right. So while you do Dr. Fitness and the Fat, you've got a big star coming on later today, right?
That's right. We have the creator of P90X, the big exercise DVD series.
Well, I don't know how good he is at exercise, but the marketing genius behind
exactly.
this.
That's what I want to learn about.
Muscle confusion?
Muscle confusion.
Man, that is...
Because muscles, they get confused. It works better.
That's like Steve Jobs-worthy marketing action there.
Do you think that works in business?
Yeah,
confusion? You think we should shoot for confusion or clarity?
Well, there's plenty of it, so there's the whole supply and demand thing. So we're going to have a lot of fun this morning. We've got a studio full, a little bit different show this morning, a special edition dedicated to a group of folks that are quite serious and quite well-equipped to help businesses get going and stay profitable. We're going to be visiting with some guys from the Ritz Group this morning. And first, I'd like to introduce the Grand Poobah, the president and CEO of the Ritz Group, Mr. Larry White. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
Well, we are delighted to have you. The Ritz Group, a networking group, a venture capital group, a bunch of old guys that are just tired of doing stuff by themselves and want to hang out together. Or what are you guys up to?
I think you've just netted it out.
Is that everything?
We're done now.
By me. It's back to you.
Well, the Ritz Group's been around Atlanta forever,
years.
Right?
26 years.
Wow.
And it's the new Ritz Group. My company just bought the Ritz Group.
Okay.
And we developed technology and thought the technology with the physical network side would help catapult Atlanta and Georgia into the equity investment scene. So our goal in the Ritz Group is to connect entrepreneurs and small businesses with that are selling shares in their company or private stock to angels, rainmakers, and venture capitalists. And we do that online, and we do that with our monthly physical networking meeting.
Now, is it tying in with that new crowdfunding law in any way?
Well, yes, it does. If you go through the ways that entrepreneurs fund their businesses, you know, they first start out with family and friends.
And fools. I believe.
Yeah.
It's the 3F.
Those
are the 3F.
Family, friends, and fools. And, of course, to do that, you just have to be a major annoyance at the family holiday get-togethers, and they finally, to include your spouse, will contribute funds. Well, when you run out of those funds, the next is you max out your credit cards. And
are you speaking of experience? It sounds like you've...
I have a tremendous amount of experience.
This does not sound theoretical at all.
No. This is 101. And once you've maxed out your credit cards, then you're going to go to your local bank, okay? And in the local bank, of course, they're not risk takers, so they're going to make you put up your house, your cars, and anything of asset
anything
value.
Anything left you have.
That's right. And then, of course, you've got to get your wife's permission to do all of that or your spouse's permission.
Right.
So those are... really the ways. Then once you're out of there, then you're into something called, well, maybe I can sell shares of my company, which currently is on a paper napkin, but well-diagrammed at that.
Right.
And of course, that has immediate value, and you're not going to be selling the value as it is today, because in many cases, it's value,
zero or negative.
Zero or negative. So what you want to do at that point in time is you want to then project what it's going to be worth in the future. And
you know, those are all true projections.
Oh, they're
very accurate.
Absolutely. And because they're on PowerPoint or
if it's a good Excel spreadsheet,
absolutely.
You got me.
And it always looks like a hockey stick. So
right.
I mean, and investors, they're really, you know, you can just pull the wool over their eyes because
they got money.
They've got money just to burn. They're easier than family and friends and fools. And of course, you know, that's not true at all. Investors are extremely sophisticated.
Right.
They know exactly what they're doing.
A lot of scar tissue.
Very much, and so you're worse than preaching to the choir. You really have to have your act together, and that forms the first problem: is how do we issue stock at a private level, and that's where the government comes in, because we happen to have our investment in private equity companies is over $1 trillion a year.
Wow.
And therefore, it needs to be regulated, and that's what our government does. Do you have any idea how much is invested in public companies, which is the next stage beyond private?
No. How much?
$1 trillion.
The same trillion? Different trillion.
Different trillion.
Wow.
But it's amazing that they're the same. And look at the regulations that we have in the SEC.
Right.
Well, SEC manages both private and public, but look at the regulations we have if you want to go IPO. To protect the investor. And again, that's the rule and the function of the government is to make sure that you might be able to pull the wool over your family, friends, and fools, but you can't and you shouldn't be able to do it to an unsuspecting investor.
Right.
So we have government rules, and we have less rules in making a private offering than we do in making a public offering. But needless to say, with Rule 504, we have rules. And one of those rules that the Jobs Act has recently impacted, in addition to Dodd-Frank, is the fact that you cannot advertise your private offering. You cannot publicly solicit your
right.
private offering. And that's being relaxed by the Jobs Act. And that's currently in front of us. And that impacts crowdfunding,
right,
which enables you to sell shares of your company and solicit an advertising over the internet.
Right. And just for the listeners that aren't familiar, crowdfunding is something like Kickstarter. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar in the fact that you're getting the public allowed to invest in their case in Kickstarter, like a project. And then the crowdfunding part, I guess the project is the company.
No, they're exactly the same. Kickstarter is crowdfunding. The difference is Kickstarter works only on projects.
Okay.
And you are making a contribution, in which case you are clearly getting something back for that contribution.
Right, you get
but
a T-shirt
it.
Or a...
You get a T-shirt,
right,
a token. You might
right.
get a credit at the end of a movie.
Right.
But it's there. It's gone. There's nothing you can
like
really
debate.
Like,
it's not
debate.
A loan. No. You're not getting any money back. You're getting something.
And you're getting no interest in the business other than what they've offered you.
Right.
And it's set up to, if we're asking for $10,000, we don't raise $10,000, nobody's credit card gets
hit
for that. Now, that's on a project basis, and we're very fortunate in Atlanta to have a company that 4 years ago started crowdfunding for businesses, and it's called 40 Billion.
Uh-huh.
It's run by Cornelius Colin McNabb. And they are well positioned as the legislation. The SEC is now having 30 days of public scrutiny of the crowdfunding.
Are we in
issue.
That 30-day period right
we
now?
We are right now, where the public can comment on mm-hmm. the ruling for the SEC before it becomes officially law. But we in Georgia are tremendously positioned to take advantage of this. Now, what 40 Billion has positioned is not only do they work on projects, but they work on selling not only debt for companies, but they also sell equity or shares in the company. So the goal here is to solicit. You can make a solicitation on 40 billion, in which case you image it, and then on the right of this, just like Kickstarter, they will say, here's what you get for this investment. So many shares and so much of a return is expected on that, and that is crowdfunding for purchasing and acquiring shares of a company.
Right. And this is right now, this is brand new, right? This is the first time ever
Extremely.
That something like this has ever been offered.
Absolutely. And it really, what we really like about the Ritz Group is because a lot of people come into the Ritz Group and they say, well, I want to sell shares. I want to raise private, I want to sell shares of stock in my company.
Right.
A private raise. And you say, that's really great. How big is your company going to be? And
trillions. That's what mine is.
Okay, how about the first 5 years?
Okay.
And first
a billion.
Answer is the first 5 years, you're going to say, well, it's going to be $1 million.
$1 million.
And the answer is if you can create $1 million business, I can tell you can make a nice living off of that.
Okay.
And that's really good. But if if that's all it's going to be.
Yeah, investors aren't.
Investors aren't going to do it. What we're looking for is that
million, hockey stick. You guys like the hockey stick.
Well, what the hockey stick, that's exactly right, because what the hockey stick says that the initial investors are then going to get taken out because some major force who can make the hockey stick happen will buy you. That represents the exit strategy
right.
for the investors that came in. So that is absolutely key in looking at selling equity in your company is what is the ultimate value. 1 million, and really I look at it, if you can build a $50 million company from a napkin in 5 years, I will personally build a bronze statue in your honor because that's one major feat. Okay? And if it has a $200 million ramp up at the end of that, you are perfect. And scale those numbers down to 5 million to 25 million, but you have to have the hockey stick at the end, which is really how you scale up, and that's what makes you have an equity strategy that pays off the investors that are doing. Now, where does crowdfunding come into that scenario? It's real easy. If you're not quite sure you're ready for that and you have a consumer market, let's go do crowdfunding and get consumer response to your proposition.
Right. It's not a theory anymore. Now you're getting the public saying, I like this idea, I'm in.
I like it, and I am really
right.
in.
And I'm writing checks. It's not like I'm talking about it. I'm putting my money on the line.
Now go to an investor and say, I just raised $10,000 for crowdfunding. They love it. Whereas before they would say, oh, let me see what your traction is. How much of this product have you sold in market? And you say, well, we need money to build the product.
The prototype.
I'm out on the street corner, you know, with my diagram.
And my aunt says it's the best, smartest thing she's ever heard.
She loves me.
Exactly.
You know, she comes to my house.
Don't most entrepreneurs overvalue? Don't they feel like their company's worth more than it really is? Or does this really help address some of that and everybody's on a level playing field now?
Well, no, that's a whole different story. That's about valuating your company.
Yeah.
And that's something that, again, the investor always has the upper hand on.
Yeah.
And it's an area where at the Ritz Group, we have a course now called Investor Bootcamp, where we're really trying to teach the entrepreneurs how to speak investor.
Right.
This is not hard. It's just not something that you can read out of a book and do. So our boot camp is designed to help these people not only position and image their pitch, but also to be able to speak investorese, which is not exactly like Shark Tank. Right. So, I mean, it's a little more deep, than Shark Tank.
A lot of entrepreneurs are a little paranoid of investors. Like, on one hand, they're like, I need the investors because I need their money because I need that money to fund my dream. But then on the other hand, they're like, well, I don't want this guy to come in and I miss my numbers for one quarter and all of a sudden it's his company and I'm out on the street. How do you kind of balance that?
Well, were you talking about the private market or were you talking
about the private market?
Are you talking about the publicly traded company, because that applies to those companies also.
I've seen people get VC funding and then lose their company.
Well, that's absolutely true. And that's my point, that happens in the public market too. If the management team is not hitting the goals, the stockholders revolt. It works in the private market too, even more close to home. And you have done something wrong in that process because the VCs or the angels or the rainmakers do not want to run your company. They want you to be a success.
Right.
And it's a team and it's a partnership. And if you're so successful that your revenue is ramping you up, you are in a wonderful position.
Right.
They will make a lot of things happen. So it's systemic. You can have a great product, and if the people aren't buying it, you can't blame the people.
Right.
Because they're not buying your product. I can tell you where the fault resides. It resides in you.
Well, and also it might reside in your partners of your VCs. You didn't pick the right people
to help you.
Because it has to be a partnership. It can't be, you know, not all money is the same.
Absolutely. And I want to celebrate the event. The fact that you got that far and the fact that you made those partnerships is tremendous.
Right. And so now the Ritz Group has pivoted upon their original structure from 26 years ago.
Well, we have in the fact that we go electronic because we want to do our electronic. The electronic side of the Ritz is called the Capital Community, and it's designed to be Match.com for investors and for entrepreneurs.
That sounds cool.
Well, that's because in much like Match.com, in an investment community, you are a particular market. I'm in entertainment. I'm in medicine. I'm in sports. And the people that invest in those markets are from that market.
Right.
Okay, so one of the things that we want to do is we want to be able to image those people because they are in a particular industry. They are also early stage, seed. They've just got product or prototype. They have revenue. They have a clear path to profitability, and that's at the point when VCs come in. If you can show a clear path to profitability, the VCs are in. And finally, you're pre-IPO. So those are the characteristics with which an investor says, I'm investing in medical, I'm investing in people with revenue, and I'm investing in people looking for $10 million or $5 million or $4 million. So they know those criteria. So the capital community gives the entrepreneur and the investor a chance to image themselves with their investment criteria so they can find and be found each other based on this criteria. It's LinkedIn, but only tailored to the investment scenario.
Now, so you're targeting companies at all stages?
Yes, absolutely.
And this hockey stick, it applies beyond tech companies, right? There are other industries that can enjoy the hockey stick if it's managed properly.
We do a good job in Atlanta on technology. We do not do a good job on entertainment. Entertainment, we're number 3 and 5, depending on whatever you look at, in Georgia. We don't do anything for retail or foods. And we're working hard to redefine the model, the private equity model for those industries. And again, crowdfunding really helps open that door because we can either – people that don't qualify for the private, we can send to crowdfunding. People – or you can do both, if particularly.
Right.
Crowdfunding really works for apparel. It really works for foods. So it really opens our marketplace.
Now, when you do the crowdfunding, can you do it kind of as a hybrid between Kickstarter and equity?
Sure, absolutely. You can, in fact, $40 billion allows you to do projects, equity raises, and private and debt raises. Kickstarter is just projects. So if you've got a film, for example, take your film, put it on Kickstarter, and see how it does. You can, if you want to then put a different one on $40 billion that has to do with a debt or an equity raise,
right, a production
that.
Company that makes films,
sure.
That might work better at $40 billion.
Sure.
Right.
Right now, Kickstarter does not allow you anything other than a project.
They right.
Obviously, and maybe it's early for them because of the law, and they want to wait till the law settles down. I know $40 billion is actively legislating and lobbying in Washington. They want, and let me just, tell you what the current rules are for crowdfunding. Number one, you can only raise $10,000 per contribution
from
an individual. Number two, the max raise is $1 million. Number three, the institution or the venue offering the crowdfunding must be licensed by the SEC. And those are still being debated now. So when it really comes out targeted for February, we may lose some of those or they may add some. But right now, that's currently where it stands.
Now, are angel investors for this rule? Because I would think it would kind of poke around in their world a little bit.
No,
they're
no.
for it?
Oh, absolutely. No, anytime. It's a wonderful focus group, and it works fine. It doesn't prohibit anything that you raise in crowdfunding. Doesn't prohibit you to do any other deal with an angel or even all the way. In fact, it helps. It supports it.
Now anybody can invest, right? Like before,
sure.
Like an angel, you had to have a certain level
of
wealth.
You had to be qualified.
You had to be qualified.
We didn't mention that.
Now you don't have to be, right, under this?
Right. Well,
you just have to have 10 or as much. Right.
Let me clarify that. The other issue on the 504C and the Jobs Act says that we're going to loosen the prohibition of advertising and soliciting. Okay, but when you consummate the deal, it must be with a qualified investor. Before, you had to make sure that before you solicited, it was a qualified investor.
Right.
So now they've loosened that rein, but a qualified investor has to be. You can do the deal with a qualified investor. Qualifications are the following: $1 million in net worth. Dodd-Frank reduced that by saying that you had to eliminate real estate from that equation. Second, you have to – and or second, you have to have an income of $200,000 a year for the last 2 years and with the potential to go forward with that, or joint $300,000. So those are the accredited investor for private, for investing in private
right.
equity. And again, just to protect the consumer so that they do not get
fleeced.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good, so I want to walk this thing through. Let's use a real example. Business Radio X. Lee and I, we put our blood, sweat, tears in this thing. It's starting to take off. We're profitable. We want to expand. We want to expand aggressively. And we're looking at different models for doing that, employing some different models for doing that. And so we get together and we decide, you know what, let's go get some more money so we can do it even better and faster. Mm-hmm. We know how to produce shows. We know how to help businesses mm-hmm. use this platform to grow their business. We don't know the first – everything we know about this, we learned in the last 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So now we come to Ritz Group and – you guys help us navigate these waters. You mentioned some sort of educational course. Right. How would you work with us in that regard?
Well, the first thing you had it right. You came to the Ritz Group. The first thing you do is
got it. I'm two for two today.
That's good.
And you'll create your community. You'll create your profile for Business Radio.
Okay,
X,
so there's a profile page on the website,
just like you. Just like you register for LinkedIn or you
right.
register for Facebook, you'll register with the Ritz Group, the community profile. You will see on that community, you will see all the other venues in Atlanta that are incubators or that are presenting organizations that you can join and should join. You'll see groups. You would be in the entertainment groups, and you'll do that. You'll come to the monthly meetings, and you can exhibit at the monthly meetings. I've invited Business Radio X to have a booth at the Ritz Group,
okay.
and to do interviews with entrepreneurs like Christian and Dale, who are here with us today. And that's the way you start. We have pitch camp. We have boot camp things. But let me point out, there are organizations in the city that we support that offer a lot of incubation services and other services to help train you. And our goal is to get you to all these resources, not be the only resource, but be one of the lead resources.
So you're kind of the connector, you're the hub of this network, or that's what you're shooting for?
Well, that's what we're shooting for. You know, the goal is, you know, our goal is to connect the entrepreneurs and the businesses with investment capital. But our strategic goal is, let's make Georgia a recognized leader in this field. Right now, Silicon Valley, Austin, and Boston are the recognized leader in this. And the reason they're the leader is because the winners, the ones that have exit strategies or get funding, stay there. And what do you think they do after they
invest in more companies?
Right.
Exactly, in that marketplace. And we're not doing a good job of recognizing the leaders in Georgia. First of all, we're not doing a proper job of getting enough successes in Georgia, and we're not doing enough to get the successes in Georgia to come back and play in the arena and the marketplace. And the Ritz Group, with our brand new announcement that we're going to make on the 13th with a new venue, will help get those people back in the game, because we think they will help fund other companies like Dale and Christian with us.
Well, let's meet Dale and Christian. You brought them both with you this morning, and presumably they're going to have some nice things to say about the Ritz Group. Plus, we want to get their take on the pulse of what's happening in this world anyway. So introduce your guest, if you would, Larry.
Well, we have Dale Sizemore with Flip Films Video, and Dale, welcome. And we have Christian Coulter, who has a fascinating project with traffic cam analysis. And so I'll turn it back over to them.
So, Dale, you're no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone. We've had you in here before talking a little bit about your business. How about doing that first? Give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch about your business, and then help us understand what compelled you to get involved with this crowd.
Appreciate it. Good to see you folks again. And a lot of exciting things have happened since we came here back in the late fall of last year.
You're welcome for that.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. They all directly attributed to you guys.
That'll make it to our website now, that testimonial. Thanks.
Kevin, carve that audio out, will you?
That's right. That's right. The home game. Flips Film is a service that we created that streamlines the event and film production approval process in the local communities. It basically stitches together all the requirements for permitting and approvals that a film or an entertainment or any kind of an event might want to have to consolidate all that. We saw that there was a big hole in this industry, and there's a $60 billion film production industry in the United States alone, and it impacts things like tourism. That's about a $1.9 trillion industry in the United States. So when you make filming and tourism attractive in a community and make it easier to conduct business with them, they do more of it. And when they do more of it, we become number three and get $670 million. It also generates tourism for up to 30 years. So it has a long-term profound effect in addition to just the individuals. When I see things like Alcatraz that stopped being a prison in 1963 and they generate 1 million visitors a year and become the number one tourism attraction in Northern California, it's not because it's a cute rock in a prison there. It's because it has the media impact on it. And that's what I'm trying to do is help smaller communities build economic development, new jobs, and stimulate this by knocking down some of the roadblocks. It's been an exciting adventure so far. We're about 18 months old. We have a 100% customer renewal success rate, which is I'm blown away
That's
by that.
That's pretty good, Dale.
It's extremely good to me. Hard to overachieve on that, I guess. But we have signed up another community day before yesterday. So the municipalities continue to grow. We get endorsements by TV shows and people that call, and they say, wow, this is amazing. We were able to get a permit in 2 days because we wanted to film on Monday, and the people were on vacation. So this is a pretty baby. This is actually beginning to showcase it. The things that Larry has talked about are very unique and applicable to Christian and myself and a bunch of the entrepreneurs. I met Christian and a bunch of other folks through Georgia Tech's ATDC, Advanced Technology Development Center, of which Larry is working with them as well. And that's a very good synergistic way of being able to have resources for entrepreneurs, as Larry mentioned. But it's not the only one. And as a result, we have kind of tag-teamed out, and we share resources and ideas and good practices with each other. That needs to be injected into the investment community. We have had a wide range of experiences of talking to investors and reading about investors and all that convertible debt and Series Seed and all the different things that go on that are very appropriate. But as a startup company, first of all, a small business is not someone with 500 people and a grand piano in the lobby. Let me get that straight. I know.
What's a lobby?
Yeah. you know, lobby is, you know, a seat that moves forward, you know, in your car. So I think a recalibration of the business and the government and the programs is that, you know, congratulations, we stimulated all these emerging companies that have a private plane. No, if you can eat regular, you're not an entrepreneur.
Dale, don't run away my customers.
No. I'm just saying we need to calibrate. There's a place for a lot of success in the marketplace. We read about the real high-profile successes. I call that everybody wants to date Britney Spears. Not everybody can. Not everybody's going to have a hockey stick. So I think there needs to be a balance of prudent business approaches from the investment perspective. I think they need to look at businesses that can tell their story effectively, and that's what the Ritz Group's been able to do in my experience, my limited experience with their new approach to it, which is get your message to the right people in the right time so they don't give you 10 seconds to scan a one-page document and just throw it in the trash because you didn't see it's going to make $200 million. Many of the angels that I've had a chance to rub elbows with, you know, say they have 10 investments and six of them kind of went south and a couple of them they're kind of on life support and the others are going away. I don't know if these people are married. Do they know that they have dropped $500,000 or whatever it is, you know, six times, you know, and it didn't work out? I believe the risk management approach to coming up with a more pragmatic way of investing is going to attract more of the business, and the tools and the programs like Larry's organization has put together helps the entrepreneur from making stupid statements and overstating things, and brings it back down to business fundamentals. There's a lot of blocking and tackling that has to go on, but we hear so much of the glitz and the sexiness of, you know, oh, we raised $200 million, oh, he's in a Series A, you know, that. Yeah, okay. But there's a lot of people that go to work every day that are trying to be self-sustaining. My company's at a level which I call ramen profitable. You know, I'm profitable this month. You know, don't ask me again next month or last month. But those are the kind of things that the Ritz Group, in my opinion, has been able to bring together. It's not an environment where if you're not good for everybody, you're not good for anybody. And there are angel organizations that are like that. And as a result, you can get profiled and you can sit down and have a meaningful conversation with someone. And I've already had a couple of nice conversations with people. And it's not just about money. There are people that look at this and go, it's not right for me. But you're onto something here, and if I were you, here's what I would do different. That kind of sage advice is extremely valuable for any entrepreneur, especially the ones that haven't had, you know, lots of years in the corporate world or in the other marketplace and have gotten beaten around the head and shoulders. That kind of advice is very helpful, and there's a couple of folks. Michael Moore has been extremely helpful, not only in connection and input, but just sometimes a kind of a group hug. And that's also something that we need as well, that we're not just tilting at windmills. And that's, I think, what entrepreneurs need to have sometimes. I've heard angel investing and this level of investing described as an expensive form of entertainment. And it may very well be. It's not for the entrepreneurs. I mean, we have literally landed on the shores. We have burned the ships. And we have to take our Swiss Army knives out and survive off the land. And it's not a game for entrepreneurs. I mean, people lose their houses and their families and all their wealth and everything. So the ability of having an organization that you can turn to and say, I'm going to put my story out here and talk to people, and I can reach out and touch these entrepreneurs technologically, I guess. And that's what the Ritz Group's designed to do. And that's what's different about a lot of the programs that are available in the marketplace today. You throw it out there and hope that somebody in Silicon Valley or whatever sees it. They get 200 a day. You know, unless you're related to some guy out there named Gates or somebody, they're not going to see it. So we need something in Georgia. Investors like to be able to reach out and touch their investors. They don't want to have to fly across the country to see how they're doing. So the idea of go get Silicon Valley money, Dale, because that's where the film business is out there in California, well, that's a commute, you know, for either them or me. So we need to have something that's homegrown, especially if I'm trying to grow jobs for Georgia and improve the marketplace. And I know Christian's doing a lot of the same kind of things in a different way. Christian, you want to talk?
Thanks for throwing it to me, Dale. As an experienced radio professional, as everybody in the room here seems to be other than myself, I feel somewhat of a disadvantage here. But maybe I'll try to explain what my company does here real quick. And my name is Christian Kotcher with MetroTech Net. We use existing traffic cameras that are already up there. You see them at the lights when you turn. And we use existing traffic cameras and bring it into our data system, our data center, and we convert it into data. And we share that data then with local agencies to use to control the lights, the traffic lights, to do intelligent routing for fleets, for commercial vehicles, for first responders. So if you've ever experienced the fact that your commute, as a friend of ours who's a state senator likes to say, he lives 8 miles from Georgia 400 and about 7 miles from 575. And when he leaves his neighborhood, you know, which one is clear and the best way for him to get down to the Capitol is an important comment, but, you know, the 25 lights in between him on both ways are really what's important, and that information is just not available yet. So we're working with local communities, counties, state governments to deploy our analytics in their existing infrastructure. So it's not like we're building out a lot of things. We're just taking what they've already got and digitizing it. So we're taking the analog world of transportation, we're digitizing it. And we've got 100 IntelliSections, as our product is called, deployed in Silicon Valley, in Santa Clara County. And those went online to control the traffic lights on 5 major arterial roads for them this summer. And we're working with Buckhead right now to deploy the first 4 IntelliSections in Atlanta, meeting the Atlanta Regional Commission later today, and looking to extend that. We're part of the University Transportation Center. There's a project we're part of down there that's taking that Buckhead project and studying it, and then hopefully coming up with a national standard based on those 2 deployments. So
now, how does that work in real life? Like, you look at the flow of the cars at a given light, and you can tell where the bottleneck is, and then you can kind of adjust the lights accordingly to smooth that out?
Exactly. And what we do, and kind of the way I left IBM 5 years ago to start the solution. I was working in Homeland Security, wireless video analytics technology, and saw an opportunity for this. And about exactly 5 years ago, I guess it was 2007, around Labor Day, in a 6-week period, I lost 3 friends in automobile accidents. And that's something I started paying attention to in the 80s. 55,000 people at that time died on our roads, on our U.S. highways every year, which is equivalent of 10 years of the Vietnam War. It was roughly the same number. That's down to below 40,000 now, thanks to airbags and other safety technologies. But that's really what spurred me to get into intelligent transportation, was the fact that we have the technology today to bring those, you know, near 40,000 deaths down to zero. And around the world, it's hundreds of thousands a year. So we have the technology today to clear that up and to increase safety greatly, but we just don't have the policies and the business methods to be able to deploy that right now.
I will write you a check today for an IntelliSection remote control.
That is funny because that's a policy discussion that we're having right now. Georgia Public Policy Foundation, Kelly McCutcheon and Benita Dodd are friends, and they're kind of helping write the Plan B. Remember T-Splost failed badly? Well, So now we don't have money to build more roads or widen the roads, so now what do? Well, we can't build wider. We have to build smarter.
Now, do you think it's possible to use the existing intersections and just have a smarter traffic light, and that'll alleviate traffic?
That'll do a lot of it. Now,
like what kind of a lot? What does a lot mean? Is that
they just did basic signal timing, not like real on demand. Right. Just got the signals kind of dynamically working together on a daily or weekly schedule that was updated between.
So they have that now.
They have that now. Getting to where it's really digitized is still a couple of years in the future. We're just building the foundation for that.
And that's what your firm is helping with?
That's what we're working on. We're focusing on just the data. Mm-hmm. We don't sell the cameras. We don't sell the network.
Aren't there sensors on the ground in front of the lights?
There are, and they're wonderful. If you notice, when the blacktop gets hot and a truck sits on it and it starts getting all melty, that's usually when it works the best.
Great.
Actually not. So they always say that those the loop sensors have a 90-95% accuracy. Well, that's when they're working, because they're often not. And then to fix it, you have to go dig up the road. And what we're saying is you put up a video camera. Most times it's already there. They're getting cheaper and cheaper. And now not only can I get more accurate information, I have context. All right,
right.
Contextual information, and I can look in. So when you're using your smartphone, you're using some G-blank maps application, and you're looking at it, and you're looking at the street in reality, and it's not matching up. It's because it's based on probe data. And probe data is the guys that went ahead of you and now going 5 miles ahead are being measured 5 miles ahead. Well, that's not helping me for the intersection or the accident right in front of me.
So your stuff is real time?
Big deal.
You can look at it as it's happening, and then you can kind of make adjustments on the fly.
And more so, if you see the other traffic information saying that it's red and ours says that it's still performing well, you can drill in and look at an actual JPEG and see the timestamp and say, okay, actually, there's a picture. It actually is open.
Right.
One thing I learned in talking with Christian over this time is the context issue is so important. It's one thing to have traffic timing signals, but if that same intersection has a clear day versus a rainy day, it's going to perform differently. And the ability of having video analytics be able to respond on the fly gives it that kind of context. So it's fascinating to see the impact and the upside, not only of what it can do, but it can reuse so much of the infrastructure that's out there. And that's one of the things that impressed me about Christian.
Well, Stone, you make it a joke about having a remote controller, and you just gave me the idea of how to do the crowdsourcing. We're going to sell those for $10,000 a piece and up to $1 million, and we'll only limit them out. Now, not say it's going to be online for a couple of years, and it might not be in your area, but at least you'll have one. But that raises a policy issue, right? The question we have is, so if I have two roads, one's a major artery, one's a lesser, which one has priority? The city might say that I like the taxes from the local businesses. I want people to shop here, slow it down. The county might want people to pass through. The state wants it to slow down so it doesn't get back up the interstate. So they've got all these competing issues and demands. So what if I could pay for a green light? That's a question that we have to look at.
They have the tolls now.
Exactly.
That are variable based on much money you want to pay to be in the HOV lane in 85.
Right. So why don't you pay for how many greens? It is a question. Now, that will be – now, people will – I once talked when I was with IBM to New York City and talked about the hot lanes like we have it, and they refer to them lovingly as Lexus lanes.
Right.
So there is a social political element to this. However, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than building flyovers. Right, flyovers, which they are building in Texas and Florida, you pay a toll for.
Right.
But it's a huge investment in infrastructure.
Now, I always wondered this, and maybe you can answer this. When you're a pedestrian and you press the button to go across, does that really work,
That shocks a guy.
Now, I thought that was just to make it seem like something's happening, because people like to do something.
Well,
it's like the elevator button.
Right, it doesn't really do anything, but you think it does.
How does that work now once we do have intelligent vehicles?
Right.
So all of those things have to be factored in.
Does it really work, though?
It works, but see, what it does is it's just like the video cameras that are there now
right.
and those loop sensors in the pavement that's digging up. By the way, when you dig that up, you just took the life of the pavement you just invested thousands of dollars in. You just cut it in half. So that's why we're kind of against that as a solution.
Right.
But when you push that, what you're doing is when you land on that left-hand turn learn pad, or the camera detects you in the left-hand learn, you're making a call for demand. So you're not immediately changing it. You're just saying somebody's
here. Hey, someone's here.
Start it, and then it goes into a cycle. And depending on the light, depending on if it's two major roads, one of the funny stories is Georgia has a regional transportation operation program, RTOPS. And so they take major roads like 141 and 9 and 120, and they try to coordinate those on a weekly and daily basis based on the loop and other information from video. We're trying to help upgrade that. When you take Peachtree and Piedmont, which will be our first IntelliSection here in Georgia.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, and which has priority? And we've got two companies outsourcing the administration of that, the operations of it. So one gets paid if 141 performs better. The other one gets paid if 9 performs better. So who wins in that struggle? It's a 50-50? Is it 60-40? How do you give priority? So these are all the types of things that we need to start thinking.
So how do you give priority? Who's more politically connected?
It's a squeaky wheel. If you call up and say, hey, I have an issue.
If Rooms to Go is complaining, it's going to turn in their direction?
You know, that's a segue. I won't go too deep in. But do you know what that store is there at Rooms to Go?
What?
A billboard. They lose money in that store. It's there because they get so much eyeballs on it. And that's one of the things you learn in working in the space. And it's not just the traffic flow, but it's business development, economic development,
right,
zoning, rental prices. I mean, all of this comes to play in city planning, and traffic is just a key part of that.
Let me take this also down to an investor level. And one of the things that we've made a recommendation to Christian is if he can take this product and get it driven by the consumers, it's a whole lot more clout than his current strategy,
yeah,
channel strategy of trying to sell to local disparate governments.
You're going to government, mm-hmm, right? That's
yes,
your path right now?
Well, so our business model is we are selling to state and locals, and investors keep saying, no, you need to do – I had a congressman say, don't go to government.
Yeah.
This is our congressman said, don't go to government. Tom Graves said, just go to retail, go to the local people. Yeah. We have to. It's a necessary step.
Because the government controls the light.
Because they control the access to that,
right,
intersection. And also they're a consumer because they need that information to do light control and signal control and 511 signs.
But the data, is that public data?
That data is yet to be determined.
So all those camera, all those pictures it's taking, is that owned by
right
the
now,
public? Or is that
whoever
owned by
owns
government?
That camera will own that.
So the manufacturer of the camera?
No, or? whoever paid to put that up.
And that's typically government at this
GDOT,
point?
GDOT, right. Now, there's a huge move, and Santa Clara is doing this, and a lot of people are doing that. There's a huge move to put them online. So if you go to different places, trafficline.com will publish these videos so you can go online and look. The question is, once I have a video screen and a web browser in the dashboard of my car, of my connected vehicle, do I really want people looking?
So you can see in the car now? Like those cameras are that good that you can see their face and who's in the car?
No, not like that. I'm saying once I'm in a car that has a browser and a
right
connectivity, that I can pull up the intersection 2 down and look at it is some thought process, which I don't think is very,
wow,
very good. I'd rather have my system interpret what that data is and broadcast the data so I can look at dots on a map and understand that
right,
better
right
than,
that's
know
too detailed, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah,
is your near
and
term
dangerous.
Is your near term strategy like Larry described early in the conversation, go out, try to get some juice with crowdfunding, have that as one of the things that you include in your conversation when you go after the private equity investor?
I learned more about crowdfunding today from Larry than I probably have spent time investigating it to this point, but here's now getting to where Dale was. Burn the boats is
mm-hmm
is an absolute. I applied for a First Growth Venture Fund this morning. One of my investors is on the board there, and it's a network up in New York that kind of grooms CEOs and startups. And they had a question there, are you committed to work full-time this next year? And I think I said, my life, my fortune, and my sacred honor. I mean, you're done. You're
right
here. And as much as, it's funny when I have friends who are still in corporate America, and I've worked at GE, MetLife, and IBM, when I have friends that say, you just got to go get a job. Yeah, okay, so I'll just burn the last several years
right
of my life, burn my dreams, throw all that money we put into it away, tell my investors they're out of luck, and I'll just go look for a job and go back to IBM where it's nice, safe, and happy. It's not that simple.
And that's assuming you can just go get a job, too.
Yeah, really.
Maybe people have heard of that.
Who would hire you, too?
That's the problem. Entrepreneurs are unemployable.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I almost fired myself.
What have you been doing for the last 2 years?
Don't ask, don't tell.
Right.
Now,
there's a lot of that.
Larry, Dale mentioned something, and I'd like your input on this. Are investors only looking for the home runs, or are there certain investors that are trying to kind of build a portfolio where they take some doubles and singles and triples, or is it a hockey stick or nothing mentality?
Well, everybody's looking for the home run, obviously. But the investor can go one-on-one with Dale or Christian, or he can go into a pool. Pools, whether they're an entertainment pool, whether they're a technology pool, are designed to minimize the investor's risk.
Okay, so in that case, right, so then a double would be okay in a pool.
In a pool.
But they may not directly want to go and shoot for a double.
Well, the pool offers you the safe advantages, because in the pool, they know there are going to be five or six that fail. There are going to be four or five that hit a double, and there's going to be one or two, and everybody's looking for the home run. If you get the Facebook or the Google,
right,
you know, then it doesn't matter what the other ones really
exactly.
do. And, of course, then you use that money to feed the other ones to see if you can't hit a second one. So it works out really good. So an investor can say, I'm going to go one-on-one. I'm going to go into a pool. A pool fund, or later a hedge fund. And all of these funds are architected with a specific requirement, with a specific objective that they clearly articulate to the investor. So you know what you're getting and you know the risk you're taking.
Right.
So you mentioned events. You got some events coming up?
September 13th, 7 days from today, we have our first new RITS event at the City Club. Bob Rathburn, the Hawks play-by-play announcer in the Dream, will be announcing a brand new event that we're going to conduct monthly. This designed to get icons involved and our past winners in the state involved with the RITS group, and to meet our three top entrepreneurs, not only in the RITS group, but in all of the other venues in Georgia. We're going to take the best of the best and have them present at the event that Bob Rathburn is going to announce, and that first event will be in October.
Wow, great.
So we're excited about that. We have established booths, so entrepreneurs like Christian and Dale can have a booth. We have a pitch tank, and as I mentioned before, we have a boot camp.
Now, to be a member of the RITS group, is that only investors or entrepreneurs can be a member? Is it open to anybody?
No. The membership is you have to be a valid entrepreneur or a qualified investor investing. We do have rainmakers, and we have people that sell products there, but they're called sponsors.
Right.
And so our goal is to really connect live investors with real entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs that are there have a profile. What you heard from Dale and what you heard from Christian is well profiled on the Capital Community. That is free for entrepreneurs, absolutely. So you can review that and, of course, link out to all of their collateral material.
And you also created a new community when we started talking. About connected vehicles and intelligent transportation.
Those are groups within the community because I want to form, birds of the feather groups.
Mm-hmm.
And Christian talked about the smart vehicle. And another thing that reminds me of that I really believe in is mashups. And that's where one of the things that I really like to do is you might have a great big vision and you might have a good idea. And I always say it's really tough to take a big vision with two guys and a dog named Blue and make that palatable. But if you put a couple of these together and you get some investors that are part of the RITS group, and together you say, hey, this really makes a lot of sense. We're going to take the president out of this company and the technology out of this and marry these up, and you create a package that's really fundable.
Right.
And so those are what I call mashups. And I'm really a strong believer in that in the RITS group and hope to do that. I have a couple of companies that I'm really hoping to do that with. So that's a strong benefit of when somebody has a good idea and may be struggling in some regards to take the best parts of each and make a viable proposition that's attractive to either the pools or specific individuals.
Yeah.
And investors love that.
Dale mentioned before ATDC, which we're in the Alpharetta Circle, and it's been a real benefit to us. We've got kind of a band of brothers and I guess a couple of sisters as well. And, you know, we meet every Friday morning and beat each other up, help each other out,
right.
Pull each other up, and share information. You know, do you have a web designer? How about a marketing person? How did you handle this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very helpful for that. Chip has been our leader there, and he's been really wonderful, and a couple of our past leaders. But one thing that's maybe that I hope the Ridge Group is going to help. And that's what when Larry kind of walked into that buzzsaw a couple weeks ago when he came and visited us, he kind of got the, here's what's, you know, difficult about raising money in Atlanta, which we all have a major in. And kind of the problem is you have to major in fundraising to be a startup. I know guys and gals that are more in tune and up to date on TechCrunch and Startup Lounge and crowdfunding and all of these things more so than their own product or industry. And that is what's too bad. And that's what's difficult because you have to be a double major. And that's what I hope the Ritz Group and other groups like that are going to help is, you know, look, tell me about crowdfunding. Do I need to do it or not, Larry?
Mm-hmm.
Good, go.
Yeah.
All right, next thing. Right? Yeah. And I work 16 hours
a day. Go for
yesterday.
The consumer. Christian.
Right.
Go for the consumer.
Well, and we are. And part of our strategy is we are doing a mobile app, but we first got to get enough critical mass. So in Silicon Valley, where we have 100 IntelliSections, we're working with the county to be able to have access to launch that, and we're looking for the same here. That's the first step. The next step is to...
I can absolutely attest to the fact that when in my companies, I used to... I'd work in my companies and I'd run out of money, and Dale is right. And then I would say, oh, you got to go raise money in the private equity. And there was a lot of organizations, and I would go to them and I'd say, wow, this is really complex. This is really hard. And so I'd work hard on raising funds. In the meantime, my companies was
like
going to
down.
Heck in a handbasket, yes. And so then I'd run back and I'd say, you got to look at my business. And I'd say, oh, my God, it looks so bad. They're never going to buy this. So I'd run back and fix my business and run out of money again, and I have to run back to the market. You continually do that. That's called the drill.
Exactly.
A friend of mine, Chris Nolan, who's Jack Kemp's son-in-law, said to me a few years ago, I was going to meet with some folks, and he said, look, your job as a CEO, you've got one job, bring money in the door.
Yeah. Right.
Whether it's through revenue or through capital, that's your only job. And you're right. One time I spent too much time working on a big proposal, got away from the business plan. Then you work too much on the business plan, your customers get away from you. So that is our multiple hats, but those are our two biggest, and our main job is just to get money in the door.
So as we wrap this morning, let's get contact details from everybody. Make sure that our listeners know how to reach out and have a substantive conversation with each of you. Let's start with you, Christian, and we'll just go around the horn, and we'll land on you, Larry, about the Ritz Group.
All right. Christian Kotcher, MetroTechNet is my company. 678-478-7614 is my telephone number, and I can be reached at Kotcher, KOTSCHER, at MetroTech-Net.com. That's Metro, MetroTech-Net.com. And thanks for the time. I've enjoyed it this morning.
And I'm Dale Sizemore, Dale at Flips, FLIPS, FlipsFilm.com. Or you can Google Easy Film Permitting, and then we'll find us. 678-576-5100. My website is www.flipsfilm.com, F-L-I-P-S, film.com. Stands for Film Location Intelligent Planning System, by the way. Appreciate that. There's some logic in here, Christian. I'm smarter than I look.
I thought you were being flippant.
I was going to say you've got the perfect radio face.
been told that.
I'm Larry White. I'm with the Ritz Group. It's www.ritzgroup.org. I can be reached at 678-481-4939 or Larry at theritzgroup.org.
And thank you so much. Yeah, and the event date again?
September 13th, the City Club in Buckhead.
At what time?
4:30 to 7:30.
Good stuff. All right. Thank you all for being part of this Ritz Group special. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week.